Promise of Sunshine, written by Rajmate and read by Hello Moon. Summary. Eddie had always expected that he would find his soulmate through the snap of a broken guitar string or the needle burn of his tattoos. Instead, Billy Hargrove breaks a plate over Steve Harrington's head, and Eddie finds himself tied to a boy he knows only through the lens of the high school hierarchies. Almost a year later, Eddie has spent time learning everything he can about Steve, the way he thinks, the things that send him into a panic he cannot or will not explain, the look in his eyes before he says something heinously bitchy and devastatingly funny. He and Uncle Wayne have found themselves permanent seats at Victoria Harrington's Sunday dinners, and Eddie can almost ignore the rapid pace of his heart when Steve smiles at him. Except that Steve has gone missing, had bailed on their plans for the 4th of July weekend without a word, and this would be fine, really. Except, Eddie's getting bruises that aren't his own. Victoria hasn't seen her son in days, and Dustin Henderson, Steve's perpetual shadow, is also missing. While the injuries Eddie's received through their bond paint a picture almost too horrible to comprehend, Eddie and Victoria scramble across town to try and find Steve and save him from whatever nightmare situation he landed himself in before it's too late. July 1985. Eddie spent the entire ride to Steve's house alternating between speeding and braking just enough to get himself back under the limit before the speedometer began to creep up again. He wasn't worried, not really. He was just concerned. That sounded softer, sounded safer. But he knew himself well enough to know that if he got pulled over for speeding right now, he was going to lose every single shit he had. He hadn't heard from Steve in a few days, never mind that they were supposed to hang out yesterday, and no one had answered the phone at the Harrington house when he called, and... okay. Eddie was worried. Steve could be flaky in that sort of ditzy way he had, rolling up at 6:30 when they had been planning on meeting at 5:30 because he got the times mixed up, or he couldn't read his own handwriting, or he got bullied into driving a bunch of middle schoolers around and couldn't say no to them. But that was an hour, and it only happened occasionally. It was one of those weird Steve quirks that Eddie had been learning to work around for the past 6 months. Except, no matter how Eddie tried to convince himself otherwise, this didn't feel like one of those Steve quirks. This was days of Eddie not hearing from Steve and one complete blow-off, which had never happened before. This was Steve apparently vanishing off of the face of the planet without rhyme, reason, or warning. Granted, they had just been planning on watching a movie and getting high, but they still had plans. And then Steve didn't show up. And then Steve didn't answer the phone when he called yesterday. And then 15 minutes ago, Victoria Harrington had called to ask Eddie if he wouldn't mind sending her son home at some point, because she hadn't seen him and was getting worried. Which brought him to now, as he fishtailed, very reasonably, parked his van in the driveway in front of the Harrington house. Steve's Beamer, his pride and joy, wasn't there. Victoria's tiny blue coupe, which Eddie had heard Billy Hargrove refer to once as the MILF-mobile more than once, was in the drive. It was parked at an angle, like she had pulled in too quickly to straighten it out, like she had parked with the same sort of low-level panic concern that Eddie currently felt. It had been almost 3 months since Eddie had bothered knocking on the front door to the Harrington house. He had his own key on his key ring. He didn't need to knock, but there was something about the fear of concern that was bubbling in his chest that made him knock on one of those enormous double doors. It felt like his knuckles had barely brushed the wood when the door was positively wrenched open and Victoria stood on the other side, wisps of hair coming out of her usually immaculate French braid and her keys in her hand. She was wearing the same oversized sweater that she had been wearing the first day in the grocery store. It was a sweater she wore when she wasn't feeling up to presenting her best face to the world. It was the sweater she wore when she was worried about Steve. I called Claudia, but she said that Dustin didn't come home last night either. Victoria's lips were pressed into a thin, bloodless line in her face, and Eddie noticed that her hands were shaking. Steve had been cagey about the details that had led to his fight with Billy Hargrove the previous fall. He'd been willing to admit that he'd been helping Dustin Henderson look for a missing cat, but it was unclear how that missing pet turned into a fight, turned into Steve's friendship with the younger kid. Still, since last fall, there was a good bet that Dustin either knew where Steve was, or was right there in the thick of whatever they were doing with him. Dustin missing at the same time as Steve was? That meant trouble in a way that Eddie would not let himself think about. Eddie could see that Victoria was rapidly moving on from concern to panic, likely remembering that the last time that the kid had been unreachable for more than a few hours, Steve and Eddie had ended up with a concussion. "I'm sure he's fine, Vicky," Eddie said, trying to summon up his rock star stage presence, as Steve liked to call it, to wear bravado like a cloak over his shoulders to get the two of them through this sort of scary moment so they could yell at Steve for forgetting to call them. Because that's all it was. Steve had gotten roped into some weird science project with Dustin, and they had forgotten to call home. Eddie was sure that was all that was wrong. Never mind the tiny voice that whispered about the parts of Steve's story about last November that never made sense, like what drove their search for a missing pet to the junkyard, or why Steve was the one alone with all the children at the Byers house when Billy came calling. Notably, none of the children had been Will Byers, and the one time Eddie had asked about where exactly the Byers had been when this went down, Steve had gone shock still and silent until Eddie started babbling nonsense in an effort to get that look of panic off of Steve's face. "Look," and he waved a hand over his face, gesturing like a bad stage magician. "I'm fine, so we know that he's fine." Eddie had to be cursed, because that was the moment that the first bruise began to bloom across his eye socket in an explosion of pain. Eddie fairly doubled over, hissing breath through his teeth as pain lanced through his eye, informing both him and Victoria Harrington that wherever Steve was, he was not fine. November, 1984. In the stories, it was something small that informed people of their soul match. In rom-coms, it was usually a paper cut, or a stubbed toe, or a bump on the forehead from running into something in that klutzy way of women that Hollywood thought was endearing. In the fantasy stories, it was usually a graze from a weapon, a dashing scar shared between two people, sometimes a broken arm or finger if the story wanted to be dark about it. In the tragedies, it was a fatal blow, the information coming too late for the pair to do anything other than more than their potential. Achilles dragging the corpse of Hector thrice around the walls of Troy while still bleeding from the wound that killed Patroclus. Eddie didn't get any of those things. Eddie got 6 stitches from a gash on the left side of his head and a face full of bruises. Eddie got a grade 2 concussion. Eddie got a talk from the doctor about how he was lucky, actually, because he was just getting the shadow of the actual injuries. Whatever his soulmate was feeling was definitely worse. Eddie got vomit on the doctor's shoes. This was supposed to be a happy moment. Eddie had a soulmate. Eddie had a soulmate. Eddie had a soulmate. He was scared shitless. His head hurt so much that he couldn't even finish a thought without wanting to vomit. Loud noises or bright lights made him want to smother himself, but he couldn't, because every part of his face hurt. His stitches had meant that there was a small section of his hair that had needed shaved, and if he thought about that too long, he might genuinely start crying, because the concussion fucked with his emotions. Except crying also hurt because of that same concussion. And he knew that the doctor hadn't been lying to him. What he was feeling was less than the pain that his soulmate was in. It didn't stop him from wishing desperately that he wasn't hurting like this. Wayne took a week off from the plant to wake Eddie up every few hours and feed him soup once he stopped puking everywhere. Truthfully, Wayne probably could have gone back to work after the first few days, but he had been there when it had started, when Eddie yelped and shook his hand out in the middle of a movie, a sudden pain across his knuckles. Wayne had looked at him, curious but hopeful in a way that Eddie didn't see often. "Y'all right over there, Eds?" he had asked, and Eddie wanted to answer when the pain came again. Eddie knew what throwing a punch felt like. "I think..." He wasn't sure how to explain what he had been feeling. Excitement, maybe? Fear? Fear that his first touch with his soulmate was the thrown punch? Fear about what that said about his match? Fear about what that said about him? except then there was a searing line of fire in his skull, and his clapped hand to the side of his head came away wet with blood, and the hope that had fallen out of Wayne's eyes to be replaced with fear. It had only gotten worse from there. Afterwards, after the hospital, and after the bed rest, and after Eddie could string a thought together without getting a headache, Eddie wondered about those first two punches, about a soulmate starting a fight that he clearly lost. "At least your match will be easy to find," Wayne had said on the fifth day. Eddie could move around by then, could handle lights without wanting to gouge his own eyes out, and the lighter bruises had begun to yellow on the edges a bit. And that was true. It would have been easy to walk into the halls of Hawkins High and look for the other student who looked like they got their ass kicked, except that would be actual suicide. That was why he was still at home. Because if he walked into the cafeteria wearing bruises that matched Steve Harrington or Tommy Hagen or, God forbid, Billy Hargrove, his life would be over. His final, biggest secret exposed to the very people who would use it to destroy him. Wayne, bless him by every fantasy pantheon that Eddie could think of and that one god he didn't believe in, had known. He just hugged Eddie and rubbed his back gently when Eddie had tried to explain it to him in stuttery, broken sentences. "I'm not going to make you go to school with a concussion," Wayne had said, and that was that. Well, not entirely. There was Wayne pressing pills into his palm and handing him a glass of water, lingering for a minute and placing a hand on his head, well away from the stitches, and saying, "I love you, Eddie." And then they had gone grocery shopping. It was supposed to be innocuous. They needed more rice and coffee. Eddie wanted some eggs because he was tired of soup, and it had been the middle of the day. No one went grocery shopping in the middle of the day. For the most part, they had been fine. Usually only one of them went, their schedules off just enough for grocery shopping together to be something that would have needed scheduling. So it was nice to wander the aisles, picking sides and a pointless bicker about short grain versus long grain rice, and beer selections before they had turned a corner. Standing in front of the eggs, opening each container and checking every egg methodically, was Victoria Harrington. Eddie had never spoken to her before, but he knew her by sight, by the hair, and by reputation as the paragon of wifely devotion and community leadership. She and the Munsons did not run in the same circles. But there she was, doing the grocery shopping, wearing a pair of high-waisted jeans and a worn University of Chicago sweater that was just a little bit too big for her, her chestnut-colored hair pulled back into a French braid. And none of this would have been worth remembering, except that she finally settled on a carton of eggs, pulled it out of the refrigerator, and promptly dropped the entire thing on the floor when she caught sight of Eddie. "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to startle you," Wayne said, hand on the cart, like their presence had been enough to make a grown woman jump. Because he was polite like that. But it wasn't just a shock from being startled in the refrigerated section of the grocery store. It was something more. "You didn't," she said, still staring at Eddie. Wayne waited a moment, and Eddie started shifting his weight back and forth between his feet. He knew he still looked a mess, but this was starting to feel like a little much. 5 seconds. It took Victoria Harrington 5 seconds to get a good look at Eddie and come to whatever conclusion she came to. She stepped over that smashed carton of eggs and held a hand out towards Eddie, smiling. "I'm Victoria Harrington," she said, as if they didn't know who she was. "And I think you might be my son's soulmate." The ride to the Harrington house was almost silent. Wayne turned the radio down so low that Eddie could barely make out the genre of music that was playing, let alone pick out words or chords. He wouldn't have been able to hear the music over the noise in his head anyways. Steve Harrington was his soulmate? That didn't seem right. Why him? And why now? Eddie remembered the previous fall, the mess that Jonathan Byers had made of Steve's face, and how the aftermath was not the vengeful social massacre that Eddie had expected, but instead King Steve with a new set of lunch buddies? For a single week, Eddie shared something in common with Tommy Hagen, and was that he spent his entire lunch period staring at the side of Steve's head. Where Tommy had been glaring holes into Steve's face like a jilted lover, Eddie had been more confused. What had happened to the boy king who had stalked the halls of Hawkins High to bring him so low? This time, Eddie hadn't been at school for a week, so he was missing all the over-exaggerated rumors about what had happened. But he wondered if Byers had gotten fed up playing second fiddle to Harrington and had taken another swing. Even as he thought it, Eddie knew that couldn't be the answer. It was like he was trying to put together a puzzle, but half the pieces were missing, and also he didn't have the box to look at. All he had was what he thought he had known about Harrington, and that had to be wrong. The universe didn't hate Eddie enough to give him a soulmate that would hold his head in a toilet, would it? Stupid question. Eddie's mouth was so dry that it took him a second to work up the saliva to speak, to ask Wang to turn the car around and go back home, where he could hide under his blankets for another week, where he didn't have to know. Except he had waited too long, and they were here. Here, being the hideous abomination that the Harringtons called home. Holy shit, what was this boxy monstrosity, and why was the garage so big? And none of that mattered, because Wayne had parked the car and was looking at him, and there was hope in his eyes again, like this would be a good thing for Eddie, and Eddie felt like his stomach was going to drop all the way out of his ass. Steve's room was dark, which was a good thing, because if his head had felt anything like Eddie's had the past few days, the light had to be daggers in his eyeballs. Also, that wallpaper was bad enough in the dark. Matched the curtains. Holy shit. Eddie's soulmate had plaid wallpaper and matching curtains. There had to be some mistake. Except when the lump of blankets on the bed, including the matching plaid bedspread, Jesus H. Christ, moved to reveal just enough of Steve's face, Eddie knew there hadn't been any sort of mistake. The bruises that started to yellow on Eddie's face were just fading to purple on Steve's, but the shape was the same. There was a line of stitches that ran up into Steve's hairline that exactly matched the line Eddie had, down to the small shaved bit. Eddie wondered if that had hurt Steve as much as it had hurt him, force squashing that thought. Steve blinked at him, clearly confused. Nancy? Oh. Ouch. No, sorry. He could sort of see it, was a thing. In the dark, with long hair and severe concussion, he could maybe, possibly, be mistaken for Nancy Wheeler. Eddie knew he should have let Mrs. Harrington do the introduction, but he had read far too many fantasy books. Had built this idea up in his head, even if he didn't want to admit it to himself. Didn't want to look at that mental picture too long to see the shape of what he was hoping for. He knew what he was hoping for wasn't his soulmate, thinking that Eddie was his girlfriend, but apparently that was what Eddie was going to get. Do I? Steve was squinting at him like he didn't understand what was happening, like he was going to ask if he knew Eddie. And that was fair, because Eddie also wouldn't have guessed what was going on. Also, Steve was probably still suffering the worst effects of the concussion they both had, and that was definitely messing with his thought processes. Eddie kneeled next to the bed, putting his face almost level with Steve's, rather than looming over him like he had been. "Ran into your mom at the grocery store," Eddie said, and he could see the thought blooming behind Steve's eyes, could see him putting together what this was, who Eddie was. "She brought me and my uncle back here because she recognized." He waved a hand at his face, as if Steve could forget the fucking impressionist painting that someone had turned his face into. "Our bruises." Steve reached out a hand slowly, either to give Eddie time to move away or because he was still concussed. Eddie didn't pull away. He wasn't sure what Steve was doing, but he didn't lean back. Steve set his hand on the right side of Eddie's jaw, where the bruising was the lightest on their faces, and though his smile was a little wonky on account of all the damage, one of his eyes was still swollen shut. Eddie felt his heart kick in his chest, even beat to shit. Being the sole focus of Steve Harrington's smile was like being the only person in the world to have the sun shining on you. One smile, and Eddie knew that he was a goner. "Hi," Steve said, wonky smile and all. "I'm so happy to meet you." It wasn't the first meeting that Eddie had imagined with this soulmate, but Eddie was sure this, both of them concussed, Steve cradling Eddie's face in his dark room with the terrible wallpaper and matching curtains, was better, actually. July, 1985. With Dustin unavailable to question, Victoria had suggested that they head to the mall. Maybe, she had said, and her tone was so falsely upbeat that it set Eddie's teeth on edge. We've just been missing him in the evenings, and he's been at work. I don't have a copy of his schedule for this week. That was true. The copy of Steve's schedule on Eddie's fridge was also out of date, because Eddie also hadn't seen Steve yet this week, which was part of the problem. But it hadn't been a big deal until today, until the black eye, followed by bruises upon bruises that made Eddie's head swim. If Steve wasn't there already, he was definitely staring down the barrel of concussion number 3. On account of the fact that Eddie's eye was well on the way to swelling shut, Victoria insisted on being the one to drive them to the mall. Here was the thing. Steve drove like a grandma, which drove Eddie bonkers, no matter how endearing he might have begrudgingly found it. He was allowed to feel two ways about a thing. Shut up. Steve just said that he had a pretty bad experience with a bad driver, and he liked knowing that he was in control of the car. Which, frankly, just codified something that Eddie had always assumed about Tommy Hagen. Eddie had always assumed that Victoria would drive in a similarly grandma-like fashion. Like mother, like son, right? He had assumed poorly. Victoria drove like hell had opened up, and demon bats were pouring from the earth and would eat them both alive if she let up off the gas even a little bit. When they found Steve, Eddie was going to ask if this was a regular habit, or if this had been Mama Bear Harrington searching for her cub. He was probably never going to get into another car driven by this mad woman. That was for sure. All things considered, Eddie was glad that the universe decided to be kind enough to wait for Victoria to park the car before breaking Steve's rib. Or, that was what Eddie had to assume the pain was, the stabbing crack in his side, the white-hot lance of pain, the sudden sharp agony around every gasping breath. Eddie? Victoria's voice was heavy with concern, edging into the panic that they had both been keeping at bay for what felt like hours now. Are you all right? Despite knowing that she was really asking if Steve was all right, Victoria managed to make it sound like she was solely focused on Eddie's well-being. She was polite like that. I think we just broke a rib. The phrasing had always struck Eddie as being too cutesy previously. Oh, we just stubbed our toe, or we got a paper cut. It had always felt like waving the bond around carelessly, a wailing about the tiniest of hurts as a way to shove the bond in the faces of everyone who happened to be in earshot. Look at us! We're bound together by destiny, and one of us can't open an envelope without hurting the other! Except this wasn't a stubbed toe or a paper cut. This was a broken bone, a beating that made the violence Billy had inflicted last year look like a joke, a pain that Eddie welcomed in a way that made him sick to his stomach. Every hurt that Steve shared with Eddie meant that Steve was still alive. He was getting the shit kicked out of him somewhere, but he was alive, and that meant something. As long as Steve was alive, his injuries were Eddie's. Eddie would take every bruise, every broken rib, would take them gladly, for the comfort they provided by telling him Steve was still alive. This "we" was a reminder for both Eddie and Victoria. Steve was still alive. They just needed to find him. I should take you to the hospital, Victoria said, her gaze focused somewhere in the middle distance, like she was looking for her son in Eddie's shadow. Fuck that, Eddie bit out, each breath easier than the last as he learned to breathe around the pain in his chest. I'll go when Steve goes. Victoria looked conflicted, torn between soothing away the mirror of her son's injuries by getting Eddie taken care of, and keeping Eddie close for the updates on how her son was doing. But she must have seen something when she looked at Eddie, something that told her that he wasn't going to budge on this point. So instead of bundling him back into the car and driving him to the hospital, Victoria just nodded and reached across the center console to squeeze Eddie's hand. Maybe if Eddie was smarter, he would have seen the next injury coming. Or maybe if Eddie was meaner. Or maybe there was never a world where he wanted to imagine someone hurting Steve so deliberately. He barely noticed, to be honest, the dull throb of his head competing with the sharp stab of his rib, each out screaming the burn of scraped skin around his wrists. Except then, Victoria was gasping, trying and failing to muffle the sound with a hand pressed to her mouth. And Eddie followed her gaze to his wrists, to the pair of rope-burn rings that had appeared after the broken rib, as Steve struggled against whatever he had been tied with. The panic in Eddie's chest was a wild thing. He knew they weren't going to find Steve at Scoops Ahoy. He knew this wasn't a romp in the woods with Dustin that had gone wrong. Someone was hurting Steve, deliberately hurting him. Someone had tied his hands to keep him from defending himself while they beat him. Eddie groped for the door handle and threw it open, falling to his knees on the pavement to retch. Nothing came up, and it really just served to emphasize the stabbing pain of the broken rib, but the thought of Steve helpless while someone hurt him. Eddie coughed and retched again, splattering bile against the asphalt. Victoria made a sound that was somewhere between a sob and a scream, before tumbling out of the car much more gracefully than Eddie had managed to. She was still gentle with him, holding his hair while he sobbed, clutching at his shoulder in the closest approximation of a hug that he could handle right now. "He's still alive," Eddie managed to choke out when he could find the shape of the words around the horror that he was feeling. "He's still alive, and we're going to find him." He could feel, more than see, Victoria's nod, her agreement in the grip on his shoulder. "Come on, Eddie," she said, helping him stand without so much as a grunt of effort. "Let's go find my fucking son." February, 1985. Steve had been a mama's boy for the first 5 years of his life, and Victoria had loved every minute of it. She had the photos to prove it. Photos that Eddie had cooed over until Steve had yanked the photo album out of his hands and started a game of keep-away that had ended with both of them flushed and neither of them making eye contact. That had not stopped Eddie from going back later and flipping through the album, pausing at the picture of a 5-year-old Steve in a Peter Pan costume, beaming a huge gape-toothed smile at the camera. Apparently, once Steve hit 6 years old, he had begun to change slowly, transforming from a sweet, smiley boy into someone Victoria barely recognized. When Steve started high school, there wasn't a single person who would doubt that he was Richard Harrington's son. Eddie didn't have all the details, and he suspected that Victoria didn't either, but since that first fight, the one with Byers, Steve had been changing again. Not back into the sweet mama's boy that he had been, there was too much bite left in him for that, but away from the swaggering bully that had been all Richard Harrington, writ small. One of the changes was that Steve had stopped swearing. "It's something my mom said," he admitted one day in December, when they were smoking together, cigarette clenched between his teeth. "Should have known that your mother had opinions about swearing," Eddie laughed. It wasn't hard to imagine what Victoria's thoughts on swearing were. Eddie had heard her say without a trace of irony, "Oh, fiddlesticks," on more than one occasion. Steve blushed a little, which he'd been doing more and more often around Eddie recently. Eddie was trying very hard not to read into it. "It's not like that. She's not against it completely. She just said that it was more impactful to swear if you didn't do that all the time. She said no one is going to take my fucks seriously if I'd given them all away." Eddie felt his eyebrows shoot up in surprise before he managed to school his face into something a little less blatant. "Are you sure she was still talking about swearing?" It took Steve a second, but that blush that had been warming his cheeks bloomed into a darker red, and he shoved at Eddie's shoulder. "Man, shut up!" But he was laughing. And Eddie had mostly forgotten that conversation, wrapped it up with all the others he had with Steve while they were learning to navigate the shape of each other, while they were learning who the other person actually was behind all the rumors that swirled the halls of Hawkins High. He'd forgotten that conversation until Sunday dinner, the third week in February. Victoria had been insisting they eat together as a family since December, and had apparently meant that to include Wayne and Eddie now. Richard had been visibly annoyed about the whole thing since the first week, but he had apparently been suffering this indignation, this assault, on his family home in dignity and silence, and could do so no longer. People called Eddie dramatic. Eddie wasn't sure he would ever know for sure what had set Richard off that night, but he would have put pretty good money on the fact that the man was 2 whiskeys deep at 6:30. It had been 4 whiskeys by the time dinner was on the table an hour later, Victoria beaming over a roast she had clearly worked hard on. Richard's partially slurred rant during dinner wasn't really worth remembering. He didn't say anything that Eddie and Wayne hadn't heard before. From the pinched look of Steve's eyebrows and the way he was white-knuckling the silverware, he wasn't saying anything that Steve hadn't heard before, either. Victoria's smile had gone plastic from the moment that Richard had opened his mouth, but had vanished entirely when he referred to Steve as both a disappointment and a faggot to boot. At which point, Victoria had set her wine glass down hard enough that both Eddie and Steve winced. "Richard? Shut the fuck up," she said, and Eddie could feel himself gaping in shock. Across the table from him, Steve was staring at his mother like she was currently being possessed by the ghost of a foul-mouthed teenager. Wayne ducked his head the way he did when he was trying really hard not to smile at something stupid Eddie was doing. "You're a limp-dicked has-been, and no one gives a fuck what you have to say." Richard Harrington opened and closed his mouth a few times. He looked a bit like a fish. Victoria arched one perfect eyebrow at him, and Eddie was struck with the thought that maybe Steve was still a mama's boy. Everyone had just forgotten that his mother had teeth. Richard had stared open mouth for another few seconds before slamming out the front door in what was best described as a huff. "Would anyone like dessert?" Victoria asked, her real smile tugging at the edges of the plastic fast meal she had been wearing through the surprisingly short confrontation with her husband. Wayne had laughed until he cried. That was the last night that Eddie had seen Richard Harrington. "He's not dead," Steve said, apropos of literally nothing, 2 Sundays later. Wayne was in the kitchen, supposedly helping Victoria carve the ham, but more likely helping Victoria finish the bottle of red wine that she had opened. This left Steve and Eddie sitting at the table in silence until Steve had spoken.
I didn't think he was?"
That was a lie. The first Sunday without Richard Harrington, Eddie assumed he had manufactured a business meeting to get out of the dinner obligation. The second Sunday, Eddie had begun to wonder if Victoria had murdered him and buried him under the flower beds out back for the crime of embarrassing her at dinner. "Liar," Steve scoffed, but was fond in a way that still knocked Eddie for a loop. Steve was a bitch, no matter how changed he was from the King Steve of Eddie's junior year, but Eddie was sort of disgustingly into it. Steve was a fun bitch, all snark and inside jokes that made Eddie feel warm inside. It made him feel included every time Steve dug his elbow into Eddie's ribs, just to make sure that Eddie would see his eye roll, would know that Steve found something so offensive he needed to share his disgust with Eddie. "Okay, fine. I was not entirely unconvinced that your father had not shuffled off this mortal coil." Sometimes, Eddie opened his mouth and regular sentences came out. It happened pretty frequently, actually. And sometimes, he opened his mouth and a fucking NPC from his campaign possessed his tongue and spat out that kind of bullshit that made him want to crack his skull open and root around until he found the part of his brain that made him chronically unable to have a conversation with a cute boy without being a freak about it and just rip it out by the roots. Except he couldn't do that because Steve was on concussion number 2 already and Eddie didn't want to give him number 3. And cracking his brain open would crack Steve's brain open, etc., etc. Eddie would have settled for shoving his entire foot in his mouth at every opportunity until the embarrassment killed him. Steve, not being privy to the insanity that was Eddie's current internal monologue, had just blinked for a minute as he worked his way through that truly bizarre sentence that Eddie had word-vomited
before shaking his head with a smile. Nah, nothing that dramatic. Mom just finally served him divorce papers. She's taking this house in the settlement, and he's getting the condo in Chicago, and... Steve leaned across the table and lowered his voice, meaning Eddie also had to lean across the table to hear him, bringing them close enough together that Eddie could smell Steve's hairspray. She's also taking him to the cleaners, apparently because he violated the terms of the prenup, so she gets way more than she would have if he had been a decent husband. Eddie grinned, wide and unabashed, because while he and Steve were cosmically bound together by destiny, there was a soft spot in Eddie's heart for Steve's mother, who saw him at the supermarket and brought him home, like a stray dog. "Good for her," Eddie said, leaning back into his own seat and stealing a swallow from Wayne's abandoned bottle of beer. Steve's answering grin had enough of that King Steve bite to it that Eddie should have seen what was coming. "So yeah, she's not going to kill him until after she gets the money," Steve said casually, his grin waffling between shit-eating and bashful. Eddie snorted beer all over his shirt, laughing, which was when Victoria and Wayne came in from the kitchen, and Eddie got a lecture about stealing, and then wasting beer, while Steve schooled his face into the picture of innocence. The bastard. July, 1985. All of that, the frantic drive, the struggle of even walking around the pain of Steve's broken rib, just to be told by a harried and extremely annoyed-looking 20-something that neither Steve nor his coworker Robin had showed up for work today, and if, hastily corrected to when, in the face of both Victoria Harrington's imperious glare and the noise that Eddie made that may have qualified as a growl, they found the wayward sailors. They should let them know they were both fired. To be honest, the guy looked like he had been through hell trying to serve ice cream on the 4th of July without any of his staff there to help, and Eddie probably would have been more sympathetic in literally any other situation. Guy was lucky the workday was almost over, and that was about all the emotional energy Eddie had to spare to think of him. As it was, Eddie wanted to cry, but the thought of trying to sob around his broken rib made him shove that feeling deep, deep down. Victoria stalked out of the ice cream parlor like she knew where she was going to go next, but all of the fight slumped out of her after a few dozen steps. "I don't know what to do now, Eddie," she whispered, her voice thick. She did the same thing Steve did when he was going to cry and didn't want to. She pinched the bridge of her nose. Eddie wrapped a hand around her wrist and, trying desperately not to look at the darkening bruises on his own wrists, led her to a nearby bench. If Eddie was being honest with himself, he had known that they weren't going to find Steve at Scoops since the first bruise. Steve was a trouble magnet. Eddie knew that. But surely even he couldn't get a black eye scooping ice cream. But he hadn't let himself confront that fact until now. Hadn't let himself think that through, to realize what it really meant. Eddie was so many miles beyond panic that he could barely breathe. Victoria's hands were shaking, and no matter how hard she pinched her nose, she wasn't able to stem the tears that had begun to well up. "I'm so scared," she said, quietly enough that Eddie thought he wasn't supposed to hear it. Eddie pulled a chunk of hair forward, hiding himself behind it so he could pretend, just for a second, that he wasn't here. What a pair they must have made. Socialite Victoria Harrington looking more frazzled than anyone had ever seen her. And Eddie knew this was true. He had seen the pictures of her immediately following Steve's birth, where she was clutching a tiny, squalling baby and looking flawless. She even had eyeliner on. And Eddie Munson, looking like he had lost a fight with Meat Grinder, sharing a bench at the mall. This was the same bench Eddie and Steve had shared a maybe not completely kosher under company policy cup full of ice cream the week before. Eddie had spent most of the summer working his way through the disgusting flavors that Scoops had decided the population of Hawkins absolutely need to try, and Steve was a steadfast loyalist to his USS Butterscotch. They had compromised with a scoop of bubblegum and a scoop of butterscotch, and too much chocolate fudge on top. And it was disgusting. "I warned you," Steve said, laughing hard enough that his nose had scrunched. Eddie grabbed the urge to bite him with both hands and shoved it way, way down, where he kept every desire he had to get his teeth in Steve. Well, at least neither of us paid for this. Eddie had been stealing tiny spoonfuls of Steve's scoop, ignoring the garish pink melting blob that was his own choice, and he was in the middle of pilfering another when Steve yanked the cup away, holding it at arm's length.
Eat your own scoop. You picked it.
Because I want to try it, and now I know it's gross.
That's what samples are for, dumbass.
Steve managed to make that sound fond, and the press of his palm into Eddie's chest as he shoved at him was scalding hot. Instead of pulling away from Eddie's chest to use his spoon like a normal person, Steve kept Eddie at bay, elbow locked firmly while he licked the ice cream out of the cup. Eddie could feel his brain break, could feel the way his heart was pounding so hard that Steve had to be able to feel the thud against his fingers. Eddie suddenly understood every single girl that had stood near Steve's locker the morning after a date, and blushed when he so much as looked her way. Eddie should have kissed him, should have licked the ice cream right back out of Steve's mouth, should have wrapped a hand around that stupid red necktie thing and pulled Steve in, and never let him go anywhere that Eddie couldn't follow. Instead, Eddie had flushed, turned red from his collarbones to his eyebrows, and averted his gaze, and the moment had fallen away. God, Eddie was a coward. The bench under him was less comfortable without Steve by his side, or maybe that had something to do with the broken rib and the fear that they wouldn't find Steve in time. Eddie had felt useless before, never like this. Except,
I think I have an idea, Eddie said.
Steve had mentioned it offhand, had buried the whole thing with an unrelated conversation, but apparently had stuck in Eddie's mind enough to matter.
Steve told me, he said, and here Eddie grappled for the right words, finding it harder and harder to think through the haze of pain that was throbbing behind his eyes.
Victoria tightened her grip on his forearm and loosened her grip on her nose. It wasn't quite hope in her eyes, but it was something better than the empty despair that he had seen moments before.
He said that if something really bad was ever happening, and he wasn't there to help, we had to go to Chief Hopper, and he told me there was, like, a code phrase that would make the chief listen to us.
And look, Eddie wasn't the type of person who would usually go to the cops for solutions to his problems. More than half the time, the cops were the problem. But for Steve, tied somewhere Eddie couldn't find on his own, Eddie would march into the dingy little police station and prostrate himself on Chief Hopper's desk.
What code phrase?
It still wasn't hope in Victoria's eyes, rather something like rage, but Eddie would take it over the hopelessness of the previous few minutes. He said to tell the chief that this was code red. December, 1984.
Why now?
The question had been eating at Eddie for a while, if he was going to be honest. He and Steve had been going to the same high school for 3.5 years. There had been bruises aplenty they could have shared prior to Steve's fight with Hargrove, but it had been that fight that made the universe decide they were cosmically linked, and Eddie was sort of dying to know why. For all that he called himself stupid while he struggled with his college essays, Steve didn't even pretend to not know what it was that Eddie was getting at.
I think it was me.
Steve wasn't looking at Eddie, his head tilted firmly back to track the slow meander of the moon across the sky. They were on the pool deck, because God forbid they smoke inside the house, never mind that it was absolutely freezing out here. Steve was wearing that green sweater that made his shoulders look soft in a way that made Eddie feel violent. He wanted to bite at Steve, leave teeth marks that both of them would feel, press fingernails to his ribs and scrape, pulling tiny bits of Steve away under his nails. Instead, Eddie shoved his knuckles against his mouth, grinding bone against his teeth through the skin of his lip, just enough to feel it. Not enough to hurt. Never enough to hurt. The books never talked about the responsibility of being a soulmate, of knowing that the tiny hurts you did to yourself, the bitten lips, the nails chewed too low, the stubbed toes, were all inflicted on someone else, of the overwhelming responsibility that was. Steve looked like a work of art that night, his nose and jaw sharp angles, his hair that masterfully curated swoop, those two moles on his neck that Eddie always wanted to sink his teeth into. If Eddie could paint, he would happily spend the rest of his life painting Steve Harrington. As it was, he would have to settle for staring at him, memorizing every inch of his face, mapping the constellations of him, keeping him as safe as Eddie could manage.
"What, you asked Destiny to wait for a bit?"
Eddie pulled his hand from his own face and lit a cigarette, hoping to cover up just how much he had been staring. He immediately ruined that by holding the pack out to Steve when he was done and getting distracted by the shape of Steve's fingers. Steve waved him off and bit his bottom lip, still looking at Eddie.
"No, not like that. I just think that I wasn't the right person for you until the fight with Billy."
"What, you need Billy to hit you so hard your personality changed?" Eddie was joking, but also not. He knew how hard Billy had hit Steve, and sometimes he woke up in a cold sweat from a nightmare where he never found his soulmate, because Billy Hargrove had punched him just a little harder or slammed that plate somewhere else and killed Steve.
"Something like that."
The self-deprecating laugh that followed set Eddie's teeth on edge.
"Except, not really. Like, before my fight with Jonathan, you and I wouldn't have been a good match at all. I was a horrible person, and it took a lot for me to crawl my way out of being like that, to being someone halfway decent."
He wasn't saying anything that Eddie hadn't thought about Steve before, was the worst part. They wouldn't have been a good fit years ago. That was a fact. But that didn't change the fact that it made Eddie's stomach twist to hear Steve talk about himself that way. To know that Steve thought that he was just halfway decent now because of his previous stint as a popular jock and a lazy bully.
"Did you know Billy kicked me in the ribs? Before the fight really started, he shoved me over and kicked me in the ribs."
Eddie hadn't known that. His own ribs had been fine.
"They didn't break or anything, but they did bruise, and I know you didn't get that one. Which means that somewhere between Billy kicking me and me throwing that first punch, the universe decided that we were ready for each other."
It was weird that they could pinpoint the moment so clearly. There was usually some ambiguity, a question of, oh, what changed? Why now? That added to the mystery of the whole thing.
"I bet you have a theory," Eddie said, jostling Steve's arm with his own elbow. He was getting better about reaching out and touching, trying to find where the line was between not enough and too much. But he was never sure that he could trust his own judgment, was never sure what touch would be the one that sent Steve over the edge, that would somehow tell Steve about that wild thing that Eddie harbored in his chest, the one that made him want to reach over and grab two handfuls of Steve's hair and kiss him so deep that he could crawl inside the other boy's ribs and live there forever. They were destined for each other, but that didn't mean that Steve had to love him, had to want Eddie the way that Eddie wanted him. It just meant that they walked this world lockstep, until they didn't anymore. Destiny promised them a partner. It didn't promise them love.
"I knew I was going to lose that fight," Steve said, still looking firmly skyward.
"I mean, Jonathan Byers kicked my ass the year before, and my ribs hurt like shit already, and I knew from basketball that Billy hit like a truck. There was no way I was winning that fight. The alternative..."
And here, Steve pulled his gaze from the sky above and turned to look at Eddie. It was a heady thing, having Steve's full attention on him. Like that first day, the wonky smile from the bed that made Eddie think about the sun. It never got any less insane, never meant any less. It just flared up the banked ashes of the torch that Eddie was holding for Steve every time. The alternative was letting Billy hurt a kid, and I didn't want to be the kind of person who stood by and let that happen. I goaded Jonathan into that fight, and I totally deserved that beatdown. But the fight with Billy... There was something lurking behind Steve's eyes, something dark that made Eddie think viscerally of a shadow passing over the sun. He had seen it before, in flashes, usually when Steve talked about his relationship with Nancy. But this seemed like more.
I wasn't going to let him hurt anybody else.
Eddie knew how badly Billy had hurt Steve, probably more than anyone else on Earth did, and Steve put himself in the path of that fight to save someone else from that hurt. And he had done that, anticipating just how badly he was going to get hurt. Eddie couldn't fathom that kind of courage. Did the universe put them together because Eddie would need that part of Steve one day? The part of Steve that planted himself in front of someone else, that threw himself headlong into fights he knew that he wouldn't win? Did the universe know that Eddie would need someone like that in his corner? Or did the universe give Eddie to Steve because Eddie would never ask that of him? There was a rush of heat, the pinched fire of a small burn, and Eddie dropped the cigarette he'd forgotten about with a yelp. Steve shot him a look, that shadow gone from his eyes, replaced with a look of long suffering that made Eddie want to poke at his cheeks. "Aren't you guitarists supposed to be protective of your fingers?" Steve teased, shaking his hand against the burn Eddie had given both of them. He reached out, thoughtlessly, about the space between them in a way that Eddie never managed to be, and snagged Eddie's hands in his own. Look, Eddie knew that Steve had big hands, okay? He was a teenage boy. He spent a long time staring at his soulmate's hands. He knew the shape of them well enough to conjure them from memory behind his eyelids late at night. It still sent his heart pounding when Steve wrapped his fingers around Eddie's wrist, tugging gently to pull Eddie closer. Steve blew lightly on the reddened skin on Eddie's fingers, sending goosebumps rippling down Eddie's arms.
"What's the prognosis, Doc? Will I get to keep my fingers?"
I'm not sure," Steve muttered, his voice sliding into a rough approximation of the transatlantic accent, because Steve thought everyone who went to medical school learned to talk in the 1800s.
"I might have to cut one or two of them off, just to be sure."
He was smiling, but the shadow was back behind his eyes. "Steve," Eddie started, not sure what he was going to say, but trusting the NPC that lived in his brain to come up with something, anything, to help chase the haunted look from Steve's eyes. Except Steve beat him to it.
"If something happens again,"
Steve rushed out, the words tripping over themselves in his haste to get them out. He didn't need to say what something was. There were these pits in their conversations that they tiptoed around. Secrets Steve was keeping from him, and that was fine, really. Steve could have secrets from him. Steve didn't have to tell Eddie everything.
"If something happens again, and you don't know where I am, you need to go to Hopper. Tell him it's a code red. He'll listen to you."
Eddie nodded, taking that sentence and shoving it in the box with the important things, the things that he needed to remember. Tucked it next to the lyrics to Rainbow in the Dark, to be sure that he wouldn't lose it. Eddie was positive that Billy would never lay another finger on Steve, but there were things in the dark that scared Steve more than Billy Hargrove ever did. And if Steve thought this was important, then Eddie would remember it.
"Got it. Code red," Eddie parroted, and Steve squeezed Eddie's fingers with a smile.
When Steve turned his face back to the stars, he didn't let go of Eddie's hand.
July, 1985. The last-ditch sort of frantic scramble that sent them to the carnival. Victoria's call to the station to find Chief Hopper had mostly been a dead end, save that the receptionist had mentioned that the chief had ordered a police presence at the carnival, and that was likely where he was. No, she couldn't be certain about that, but if the chief wasn't in his office, it was probably for a good reason.
"Bullshit, it's for a good reason," Victoria had snarled, slamming the phone back into the cradle.
The noise made Eddie wince, the regrettably familiar pain in his head growing with each passing minute. Concussion number 3, then. That was hardly the worst of their concerns. Despite how frantic she had to be, out of her mind with worry for her son, Victoria was patient with Eddie, one arm out for him to lean on in deference to his fucked-up death perception and his busted rib. It was a slow crawl out of the mall, Eddie torn between wanting to run for the car, for any sort of solution, to find Steve and wrap the both of them up into a warm blanket and make sure nothing bad happened ever again, and wanting to curl up on the floor right where he was and wait for the pain to stop. Except it wasn't going to stop until they found Steve, Eddie knew. He knew that the second those red lines on his wrist began to grow, turning into something between rope burn and a bruise, growing worse as Steve fought against whatever he was tied with. So he let Victoria walk him out of the mall, towards the car, tried to breathe around his rib, tried not to cry.
He wanted Wayne. He wanted this to be over. He wanted Steve.
He had assumed that he wasn't getting enough air because of the broken rib, and he was running close enough to an anxiety attack that he was running short on oxygen. Except with his hand on the car door, Eddie found himself completely unable to draw a full breath. It felt like he was drowning. No air was getting to his lungs, no matter how he gasped for it. It was seconds, just long enough for him to start to panic, to raise a hand up to claw fruitlessly at his own throat. Not long enough for Victoria, focused as she was on getting them to their next destination, to notice. Those seconds felt like an eternity. It lasted long enough for the panic that Eddie had been feeling to turn into a physical thing, to crawl its way up into his mouth and sit on his tongue like bile, a further obstruction between him and the air he needed. Eddie could not breathe, because Steve couldn't breathe. Those seconds were long enough for Eddie to wonder if Steve was dead. They had taken too long to find him, and he had died, tied somewhere, and hurt until whoever had him killed him. If Steve was dead, and Eddie had never gotten the courage to fess up about his feelings. And then there was the air again, a sudden gasp of it burning like needles, yet feeling like the best thing that Eddie couldn't even think of right now. He was so grateful that even the power of metaphor escaped him. Eddie was still alive. Steve was still alive. Eddie swallowed, forcing the panic back down into his stomach. If he kept it down there long enough, maybe it would turn into bravery, like coal into diamonds, or something like that. Oh, look at that. He had the metaphors back. Excellent. Victoria was staring at him from the driver's seat, something like impatience in her features, but she had manners enough to attempt to keep the reins on it. Eddie forced out a slow breath and inhaled another, reminding himself that he could still breathe, that Steve could still breathe. Victoria didn't ask about his delay when he slipped into the car, which was good, because Eddie had decided that he wasn't going to tell her. She was worried enough as it was, and she didn't need to know about this, too. Except that it happened again on the way to the carnival, and again when they were walking from the parking lot. Victoria's tiny car parked sideways across a few spots, one of the orange traffic cones that had lined the lot wedged under her front bumper. Eddie waved away her concern, pressed a hand as gently as he could to his side, and grimaced theatrically, hoping she wouldn't ask. Each time, the lack of air was worse, the anticipation of the pain and panic turning each failed gasp into an eternity. Each free breath without suffocation felt like borrowed time, and Eddie tried not to suck down air while he followed Victoria through the carnival. It was most likely the fault of the concussion, paired with the lights and sounds from the booths and the crowds, but Eddie felt like his head was going to explode. He would not have been able to say how long it took until they found the chief, but every minute felt like it was a minute too long. And then there they were, Chief Hopper in a truly heinous Hawaiian shirt with Joyce Byers? Not a pair that Eddie had expected to see. For the first time in what had to be his entire life, Eddie was glad to see a cop. This felt like the sort of thing that a cop could help with, what with that whole serve and protect thing. Now that they found him, Chief Hopper could go serve and protect Steve, and Eddie could stop feeling like someone was carving out a piece of his heart. Then the chief tried to give Victoria the brush off, and Eddie abruptly remembered why he hated cops. "Not now, Mrs. Harrington. I'm sure whatever trouble Munson's caused you can be sorted out in the morning." He turned to leave, headed deeper into the carnival on whatever weird, awkward date he was on here. At Eddie's side, Victoria puffed up like an expensive cat that was made up of equal parts fur and attitude. Mrs. Byers spared them both a look, something like sympathy on her face, but she was also in the process of turning away from them when Victoria called after them. "Chief, my son is missing!" Victoria shouted to be heard over the sounds around them. The chief stopped and turned to look at the two of them over his shoulder. "It's the 4th of July, Mrs. Harrington. I'm sure Steve's having a great time, wherever he is." Eddie was fairly certain that Victoria was going to murder Chief Hopper right there. Witnesses be damned. Then the oxygen was gone again, and Eddie was gasping for air that would not come, and this time was lasting so much longer than the others, lasting until black spots were dancing in front of Eddie's eyes, until he wasn't sure that he could stand anymore. When Eddie finally, could breathe again, he was on the ground, Chief Hopper's arm around his shoulders, the only thing keeping his face from the frankly repulsive fairground dirt.
"How long has this been going on, kid?"
the chief asked, and while he still sounded like a gruff asshole, like a cop, he no longer sounded like he was going to give them the brush off, and Eddie would take it.
"This whole thing, or just the—"
Eddie gestured at his neck like that encompassed the shortness of breath.
"Both."
"Hours," Victoria said from over Chief Hopper's shoulder, her face an unreadable mask.
"It's been getting worse, but the choking is new."
They didn't need to explain what was happening. Eddie could see it in Chief Hopper's eyes. What other explanation could there be for Victoria Harrington and Eddie Munson to be running around together, especially with Eddie looking like he'd lost a fight with a meat grinder?
"Hop?"
Joyce Byers said, her voice an insistent push.
"Hop. His wrists."
Except Chief Hopper didn't so much as glance at Eddie's wrists, had apparently already clocked the cuff marks and decided they were a secondary concern. He helped Eddie sit up, pulling him so he was sitting upright rather than sprawled in the dirt.
"Have you ever heard of waterboarding?"
Chief Hopper asked, his voice low enough that Eddie knew he was the only one that could hear him. Eddie shook his head.
"It's an interrogation technique.
Makes the body think it's drowning when it's not really. It's painful, and it's scary as hell, and most people start saying anything to get it to stop almost immediately." Eddie thought of the cuff marks on his wrists, of the pain of his broken rib, of the fact that he had first had this fit, that Steve had been waterboarded almost 30 minutes ago. He thought of Chief Hopper saying the word interrogation instead of torture, and did not thank him for the kindness.
"Wherever Steve is, I'm going to bed to relay to—"
Whatever Joyce was going to say was cut off by the sound of someone shouting for help. After that, everything seemed to happen very quickly. A tall, balding man came around the corner, shouting for help, the front of his shirt covered in blood.
"They got Alexi, Jim!"
the man shouted, waving his arms.
"They got Alexi!"
Chief Hopper's head snapped up and towards the man, then into the crowd like a hawk that had spotted a particularly juicy mouse. Or, as he pulled Eddie up off the ground in a single heaving moment, like a mouse that had realized that it was being hunted.
"We've got to go,"
he said, pulling Eddie along in a weird half-drag, half-carry that made Eddie feel incredibly vulnerable. Joyce and Victoria followed behind until the chief came to an abrupt stop and practically shoved Eddie at Joyce Byers.
"Take the kid and Mrs. Harrington. Find Murray and get in the car, okay? Pull it around back."
Joyce nodded, and Victoria went to put her arm around Eddie again. Except Eddie caught a glimpse over his shoulder of a man in black power walking towards them with a gun, and Eddie realized that adrenaline was a hell of a drug. For the first time in hours, the screaming of his broken rib dulled to an ignorable pain, enough that he could follow the ladies through the carnival at a run, rather than a hobble. He'd probably regret that in the morning, but that was a problem for morning Eddie. They rounded the corner and came face to face with the balding man from earlier, and a different man sitting on the ground who was— Eddie had the very abstract realization that the man on the ground was dead. He had a half second to stare before Victoria spun him around and tucked his face against her shoulder, never mind that he was taller than she was.
"Don't look, honey,"
she said, her voice shaking. They had to leave the dead man. No one was in any shape to carry him, and that would attract unwanted attention, the bald man said in a detached sort of way. No one argued with him. They made it to the car, a yellow Cadillac that Eddie knew for a fact did not belong to the chief, with only a small detour where Joyce punched the mayor in the face. Eddie didn't even have the energy to appreciate the moment. They had barely thrown the thing in park on the other side of the fun fair when Victoria was throwing herself out of the car and running into the park.
"I'm going to go get the chief,"
she said over her shoulder before taking off. Stupid Harrington jock jeans.
Victoria! Joyce called after her, but she didn't slow. Which left Eddie alone in a car with Joyce Byers and a bald man he didn't know.
How are you involved in this?
Baldy made eye contact with Eddie through the rearview mirror. Something about his tone made Eddie deeply uncomfortable.
Steve's missing. We've been looking for him.
It wouldn't take a genius to put together what Eddie wasn't saying, but it seemed a little bit like Hawkins had lost its entire mind, so that seemed like a minor concern, really.
Oh, and we like Steve, do we?
The man sounded smarmy when he said it, like he was making an inside joke that Eddie wasn't a part of. Joyce hissed something at the man, but Eddie couldn't hear whatever it was over the pounding of blood in his ears. It made Eddie feel gross, having this man dissect whatever he thought was going on, and reduce it down to that.
Go fuck yourself,
Eddie spat, leveraging himself out of the back seat of the midlife crisis mobile.
I'm going to go get Victoria and the chief.
The pain of his rib was no longer muffled by the adrenaline of being chased by a man with a gun, but it turned out that Eddie was scared enough, and mad enough, that he could power through it now. It was easy to find Victoria, as everyone else had cleared out while they were moving the car, so her gray sweatshirt stood out against the garish yellow of the big top Hall of Illusions.
Victoria, did you find the chief?
Eddie called, limping his way towards her. She was standing stock still, one hand raised above her head, clutching a wrench. A wrench that was dripping with blood. 30 minutes ago, Eddie had never seen a dead man. Now, he was pretty sure that he had seen two. The man on the floor was so huge that he might have been a good stand-in for the Terminator, if that sort of thing happened in real life. The back of his skull was caved in, and it didn't take a cop to match the wound to the wrench in Victoria's hand. On the other side of the dead guy, the chief was leaning up against one of the mirrored walls, clutching his side and gasping for air. Eddie wasn't sure what sort of noise he made, but Victoria whirled to face him, and for a brief instance, he was positive that he was going to get brained with a wrench by his soulmate's mother. Then she lowered her arm and wrapped Eddie back up in the half-hug, half-holding-him-upright squeeze that she'd been using for most of the day. Which meant that he was standing in the doorway to the Hall of Mirrors, tucked against Victoria Harrington, who had probably just killed a man, when his fingernail ripped itself out.
Look, Eddie watched spy movies, had giggled at the name Octopussy the summer before his first senior year. He had liked to imagine that if he ever ended up as a spy, if he was ever tied to a chair and tortured for information, he would be the kind of person who would spit at the henchman's face, taking every hit stoically, like a badass. Eddie did not take this stoically. It wasn't a full scream, but it was a yelp that devolved into a whine that just made him feel more pathetic. His first instinct was to grab at his hand, try to stop the blood flow. The slightest pressure sent pain lancing into his palm. He became aware of Victoria whispering nothings into his ear, clutching at his shoulder like if she held him tight enough, she could take some of the pain from the two of them.
You're being so strong, Eddie, so brave.
Thank you. Thank you.
Again and again, and Eddie grabbed at those words and used them like a lifeline to keep his head above the waterline that was his pain threshold.
Chief Hopper, while I appreciate that you seem to be involved in something extremely pressing, I need to find my son right now,
Victoria said, wrench clenched so tightly in her free hand that Eddie could feel her arm shaking.
We can do that, Chief Hopper said, stepping over the man on the floor who was definitely dead.
That was too much blood coming out of a person's skull for them to still be alive. Steve was never going to believe it when Eddie told him about this.
Hell, Eddie barely believed it, and he was staring at it.
Chief Hopper insisted on Victoria and Eddie coming with him in the yellow Cadillac. He said that they had a better chance of finding Steve if they all stuck together, and Eddie was so tired, in so much pain, and so tired of being in that much pain, that he just agreed with him. Never mind how much sense that didn't make. Surely they could cover more ground if they split up. Except that the chief and Joyce and the bald asshole seemed to know more about whatever was going on than Eddie and Victoria did,
and Eddie would take whatever he could get right now. The other thing that didn't make sense was the crackle of the walkie-talkie that Baldy was clutching, the rapid patter of a foreign language.
"Murray, translate!"
Chief Hopper barked as he J-turned out of the funfair parking lot way too fast, everyone sliding around as much as the packed back seat would allow, which sent Eddie's rib to screaming.
"The kids are at the mall," Bald Asshole, whose name was apparently Murray, said. There was a sort of hopeless fury in his tone.
"The Russians have them pinned down to the lower floor and are conducting a search."
"What kids?" Victoria asked, her tone somewhere between flat and panicked. Affectation was seeping into the wrong syllables.
"What kids are at the mall now? Why are the Russians looking for them? Where did the Russians come from, and where is my goddamn son?"
"We don't know it's your kids," Murray said, after another hastily translated sentence about search patterns that did nothing but put everyone's teeth on edge and make Chief Hopper press his foot down the gas a little harder. Eddie wished he could see what the speedometer was at, just so he had something to annoy the chief with the next time the man tried to give Eddie a speeding ticket.
"Yes, we do." Joyce, lips pressed in a thin line, reached into the back seat and squeezed Victoria's hand, a show of solidarity that Victoria returned with a pained smile.
"Maybe they'll keep their heads down until we can get there," Murray continued, but he sounded like a man who was lying to himself. Eddie remembered the set of Steve's face that night by the pool, the way that he said that he wouldn't let anyone else get hurt, and knew that there was very little chance of Steve keeping his head down.
"Drive faster, Hopper," Eddie forced out from between his teeth. March 1985. The tickets were a "please get out of my house while Richard and I fight about who gets which pieces of furniture" gift from Victoria. Or a birthday gift for Steve, depending on who you asked. The concert had been excellent, loud and rough and so full of energy that Eddie could feel it pounding in the sternum. He even got Steve to join him in the pit for a bit, the two of them slamming into strangers together until Steve ducked out and away. He was still smiling, but there was a pinched look around his eyes that meant he was going to end up with a headache, which meant Eddie was going to get a headache. But Steve waved him off when Eddie offered to leave, promising he'd find a quiet-ish corner and hang for a bit.
"You look like you're having so much fun. I can hang out for an hour or two."
And Steve was smiling. Really, really smiling. That sunshine smile that was wonky at the corners, even when he didn't have a black eye.
"I'll be fine. Really."
"I'll know if you're not," Eddie promised, tapping his temple with a finger to get his point across when the roar of the crowd drowned him out. Steve saluted, a dorky little wave of two fingers, before he pulled away. Eddie did not watch Steve leave like a pining woman watching her husband leave for war. Eddie watched Steve leave because Steve's ass looked amazing in those jeans. He was allowed to stare. Soulmate privileges. And then he threw himself back into the pit, because even Steve Harrington's ass could not distract him from the wall of death. Later, when the headlining band was done with their encore and the crowds were emptying out on the street, Eddie went to find Steve. Their headache had never gotten bad. It stayed just a dull throb between their eyes, which meant that he was still here somewhere, just not close enough to feel the speakers in his chest. He found Steve lounging against the back fence, a black shirt swung casually over his shoulder, nursing a beer and laughing at something the pretty brunette girl next to him was saying. Eddie wondered, sort of absently, if Steve could feel the way that jealousy withered in Eddie's gut like a snake. The girl had a hand on Steve's arm and was leaning into him the way that Eddie had seen the girls at school do. Eddie had seen this enough times to know what the next move was, how Steve would reach out and gently tuck some of this girl's hair behind her ear, how he would say something incredibly cheesy just to get her to smile. Except, Steve caught sight of Eddie and broke into a grin, waving like Eddie wasn't looking right at him already.
"Eddie!"
Steve waved again, less of a greeting, more of a, "Come here, you dumbass." Eddie went, because of course he did.
"Eddie, this is Jess. She runs the merch stand for..."
Here, Steve looked at Jess and shrugged kind of helplessly. Jess rolled her eyes, but there was a fondness to it that Eddie recognized from his own time with Steve. Poor boy's memory was a sieve, but he was too damn earnest for Eddie to ever get really mad about it.
I run the merch stand for Brutal Chaos. Steve here mentioned you were in a band?
The twisting jealousy snake in Eddie's stomach stilled. Steven mentioned him. Steven mentioned his band.
Oh, that reminds me.
Steve tugged at the black shirt that was slung over his shoulder and tossed it at Eddie, who managed not to drop in the dirt by some sort of miracle.
I got you a shirt.
Luckily, the fact that Eddie was apparently gaping like an idiot went unnoticed, because a girl who may have been taller than Steve slammed into Jess's side, talking a mile a minute.
Baby! So glad I found you. The boys were talking about going up for drinks and...
The girl caught sight of Steve and Eddie, and it was like the wind dropped out of her sails. Jess wrapped an arm around the girl's waist and pulled her close, something flinty settling in her eye.
Steve? Eddie? This is Emily.
Em, the taller girl corrected.
When the girls were standing like that, pressed hip to hip, it was easy to clock the identical scar that bisected their eyebrow. Eddie still couldn't get his mouth to work. Luckily, Steve didn't seem to have that problem.
Nice to meet you, Em. I'm Steve. This is my soulmate, Eddie.
The tension fell out of the girls in a breath, Em leaning more into Jess, the two of them fitting together like complementary puzzle pieces. Whatever had stuck Eddie's voice in his throat evaporated as he realized who Em was.
Oh, shit! You're Brutal Chaos's guitar player. You were amazing.
Eddie slid closer to the group, awkwardness from a minute ago gone in the face of Steve's casual announcement of their relationship, and Eddie's almost out-of-control excitement.
Can I ask you?
He heard Jess laugh even as Em turned to him, ready and willing to talk shop.
Now your boy's done it. She can go for hours when she gets going.
So can he. Eddie heard Steve say, with something that sounded like fondness. They ended up going out for some drinks with the band. Eddie spent most of the night talking with Em, who was more than happy to answer any question Eddie asked. Steve, after a single beer, went on to beat the hell out of anyone who challenged him at pool until he had no more takers and a tidy stack of cash. At one point, Em caught him staring as Steve bent over the pool table and dug her elbow into his ribs.
You two are cute together, she said softly.
On her other side, Jess was tucked under her arm, chatting animatedly with the band's drummer.
So are you,
Eddie said, rather than explaining how not together he and Steve were. It was difficult to remind himself of that when they were here together, away from Hawkins, and Eddie was wearing the shirt that Steve had bought him, because Steve had wanted him to have it. When everyone was ready to call it a night, Em pressed a napkin with her phone number on it into Eddie's hand.
Call me when you're famous, she called down the sidewalk as Jess tugged her back towards the venue and their ratty tour bus.
It was almost the perfect night, until they got to the hotel Victoria had booked for them. There was only one bed.
Okay, so here was the thing. Eddie had no fucking clue what he should do about this.
Meanwhile, Steve, sweet, bitchy, completely oblivious Steve, had just tossed himself down on the only bed like this wasn't a weird situation at all. Eddie couldn't bring himself to move from the doorway.
Oh, sorry, did you want this side?
Steve asked, head cocked to one side like he was an adorable puppy, and Eddie just wanted to bite his face.
It's just, I usually prefer to sleep close to the door.
No, that's, fine. Eddie lied. Eddie changed in the bathroom like a coward and was relieved to find that Steve had taken the chance to change out of his concert clothes into a pair of plaid pajama pants and a black t-shirt with the arms cut off and slits in the side almost to the waist.
Eddie recognized that shirt. That was Eddie's shirt. Steve was wearing Eddie's shirt.
Look, Eddie had, just the week before, given a particularly inspired lunch table rant about how revolting it was that the jocks were so insecure that they felt the need to claim their girlfriends by plastering their names across the poor girls' backs by draping them in their lettermans. Eddie of the week before was an idiot, because seeing Steve in his shirt woke something animalistic that lived in Eddie's chest. It made Eddie want to bite at the softest parts of Steve until they both bruised with the force of his teeth. It made him want to hide Steve away in a closet somewhere, where only he could look at him. It made him want to put Steve on display so that the entire town could see him wearing Eddie's clothes. It made him, for a brief moment that had to be insanity, want to join a sport so he had a letterman to put Steve in, so that Steve wasn't just wearing Eddie's shirt, wearing Eddie's name.
Eddie?
Steve sounded hesitant. Are you okay?
How long had Eddie been standing there, staring at the sliver of Steve's ribs, the curve of his pecs, the dark hair of his armpit, that were all exposed because Steve was wearing his shirt? The world would never know.
Yeah, sorry, got that good concert come down going on.
Eddie lied. He couldn't bring himself to move from the bathroom doorway.
Are you going to come to bed?
Steve looked hesitant, like he was worried about something, and Eddie had to actively force himself to think about something other than Steve asking him to come to bed, or this was going to get real awkward really quickly.
Yeah.
Third time was the charm.
Yeah, I am.
Because Eddie didn't like to think through his decisions when he made them, he threw himself onto the unclaimed side of the bed. Unfortunately, Steve's knees were right where Eddie's diaphragm landed, which left the two of them wheezing with both pain and laughter for a minute. It was a queen-size bed, so there was enough space that he could have erected a pillow wall, or slept basically hanging off the sides, or whatever it was that straight guys did when they shared a bed. They didn't do any of those things. Steve fought a frankly heroic battle against the top sheet to free it from its absurdly tight tuck, and then rolled over so he was facing the door.
Hope you don't mind being Big Spoon.
He tossed over his shoulder with a laugh, and then that motherfucker just went to sleep. Like he hadn't completely rewired everything in Eddie's brain. And, look, if you had presented this scenario to Eddie just the week before and had asked him how long it took him to get to sleep, he would have laughed hysterically. Even just when he lay down, Eddie was sure that there was no way that he was going to sleep. But then the bed was soft, and Steve was breathing steadily next to him, the rise and fall of his ribs hypnotic. Eddie rolled into his side and faced the back of his shirt spread across the expanse of Steve's back. He didn't touch, didn't reach out and press his palm to the tease of skin that he can see, didn't tuck himself against Steve's back and breathe against his neck, didn't cross the inches between them that felt insurmountable. But he did close his eyes and listen to Steve breathe in the dark until sleep claimed him. July, 1985. It was the screaming that led them through the mall, the screaming accompanied by a shattering of glass. Later, Eddie would spare a thought for what had happened and why. He would pretend away any explanation for the crawling slug that Hopper had stomped on with extreme prejudice, but at that moment, the only thing that he could see was Steve. Standing there, looking just as bad as Eddie felt, still wearing that little sailor suit that Eddie loved and loathed in equal measure. Later, that same later Eddie would use to think about the screaming and the glass and the slug, Eddie would think about how Victoria did not drop him to sprint to her son. She did not leave him alone to hobble across the food court. She kept her arm around his shoulders, where it had been for most of the afternoon, and walked them both across the food court as quickly as they could manage. That was the moment Eddie knew she thought of him as family. Never mind the Sunday dinners or the key to the house. This moment. When Eddie's well-being was just as important to her as her own son's. And then they were crashing together in a tangle of limbs. Steve, shocked sounding, "Mom? Eddie? What are you doing here?" was lost in Victoria's sobs as she hauled Steve in for a hug with the arm that wasn't currently holding Eddie up. Eddie wrapped his own free arm around Steve's shoulder, careful not to touch anywhere he knew would hurt. He ended up with his hand at the back of Steve's head with a soft grip in Steve's normally soft hair, which was currently greasy and slightly damp. They stood there for a moment, Victoria shaking with sobs, heedless of the noise and scramble that was going on behind them. Eventually, Victoria pulled away, wiping out her tears with the heel of her hand.
"I was so worried about you,"
she said, her voice coming out in a rasp.
I'm fine, Steve insisted, his wonky sunshine smile pulling at the cut at the corner of his mouth until it began to bleed.
Don't you fucking lie to me, Harrington, Eddie bit out, his hand tightening in Steve's hair until they both winced at the sting of it.
I want some goddamn horse tranquilizers for this broken rib, and it isn't even mine.
Wait, you've got a broken rib?
Robin Buckley's voice cuts in, and despite the fact that she had spent the summer pretty vocally hating Steve, she sounded almost as frantic with worry as Eddie had felt all afternoon. Eddie hadn't even noticed her standing there, if he was going to be honest.
Narc,
Steve muttered under his breath.
Eddie gentled his grip on Steve's hair and pulled him in for the slowest, most awkward hug he could manage.
You and I are going to have a talk after this, Eddie said, voice no more than an exhale near Steve's ear. But I will keep your secrets for now. It wasn't his place to question why Steve wanted to obscure what had happened to him, to the both of them. But he thought of Hopper saying interrogation instead of torture, and clung all the harder to Steve.
How'd you break your rib?
Ah, Eddie's least favorite person. They tried not to feel vindicated at Victoria's incredibly quiet side his shoulder.
You got fucking tortured, Wheeler, or did you think he looked like that for shits and giggles?
Eddie hated three people. Ronald Reagan, Billy Hargrove, and Nancy Wheeler. And no, he wasn't going to examine the fact that two-thirds of his personal shit list was made up of people who had hurt Steve. Granted, when he turned to glare at her, it looked like Nancy had her own shit show of a day. That didn't soften Eddie's heart towards her at all. It made a tiny, angry part of him deep down inside so happy to see that she, for once, wasn't perfect and put together.
Eddie.
Steve's hand was warm on his arm, a gentle plea for him to tone down his normal vocal dislike for the girl. Eddie wouldn't have stopped, really. He wasn't planning on it. Nancy Wheeler made him want to spit glass. Except the hand that Steve had on his arm was the one that was missing a fingernail, and there wasn't anything that Steve would ask of him now that Eddie wouldn't do. Eddie pet the back of Steve's head, toying just a little with the tiny hairs at the nape of Steve's neck until Steve's shoulders shimmied in an involuntary shudder.
Not to focus on the wrong things, maybe, but, who the hell are you and why are you here?
If Eddie wasn't mistaken, the little girl with her hands on her hips was Erica Sinclair, terror of the scoop seas, demander of the many samples, and, if Steve was to be believed, future president.
My name is Eddie Munson.
Normally, Eddie would have affected a voice here, done a bow or something silly to get this child to smile at him, but the thought of letting go of Steve bending at the waist terrified him right now, so he settled for a shrug and a grin. Did not feel like he needed to explain why he was here, who he was to Steve. Standing next to each other, there could be no mistaking the identical bruises they were wearing. There was no hiding what they were to each other. And for all that, Erica did not look impressed by this explanation, and she turned away, distracted for the moment by one of the preteen boys calling her name with an exasperation that could only mean family.
What the hell happened, Steve?
Eddie turned to face his soulmate, once it seemed like no one was interested in accosting them.
Russians?
Steve said like it was a question with a self-deprecating smile and a shrug. Eddie wanted to throttle him.
Steve, I'm being very patient with you right now because I know exactly how much pain you're in, but I swear to God if you try and play this off like a joke again, I will smack you. Today has sucked from start to finish and I don't think I've ever been so scared in my life, so please.
Eddie sucked a ragged breath in, afraid for a second that this would be the moment when he burst into tears.
Please, don't joke about this. Don't pretend you're okay. Just tell me what happened. Please.
I'm sorry, Steve said, and he looked it. There was also a sort of glazed look to his eyes that made Eddie deeply concerned.
I think I've still got some of the drugs in my system. They make everything sort of loopy.
At Steve's shoulder, Robin, who was carefully not touching either of them, nodded seriously.
They were very good drugs, Eddie remembered, rather abruptly, that night by the pool, how he thought about why the universe put him and Steve together, about Steve throwing himself into a losing fight to protect someone else. Robin was scraped and bruised, and her eyes shared that glazed look that Steve's had, but her hair was dry. Eddie's throat clicked when he swallowed. "Okay, sailors, let's get some carbs in your stomachs, some water in you, and you can tell me what the hell has been going on." Eddie tightened his grip on Steve's shoulder and tried to convey with just his eyes that he meant everything that had been going on. Steve ducked his head, slightly shamefaced, but nodded. Victoria put her hands as gently as possible on Eddie and Steve's shoulders to draw their attention and nodded towards Hopper. "I'm going to go see what the chief's plan for dealing with." She waved her hand at the bodies on the floor. "All of this is. Take care of him?" She could have been talking to either of them, but it was Robin who slipped into her place to help hold Steve and Eddie up. "I will," she said firmly. The three of them made their way gingerly over to Hat Sam's, where Robin dug some bottles of water out of the fridge, and Eddie raided the heated display for some only slightly stale pretzels. "Talk," he said when Steve had managed half the bottle of water and enough of the pretzel that Eddie was no longer worried he was going to vomit. Steve pulled himself up onto the counter in a move that made Eddie wince as his ribs twinged before he started to talk. And what a fucking story it was. The more Steve talked, Robin silent until he started recounting their own misadventures under the mall, the more a knot twisted itself around and around in Eddie's stomach. It made him sick to think of Steve going through this mostly alone, to think of him waking up after Billy had tried to kill him, only to put himself between those dipshit kids and danger all over again. Steve's account of what happened to him under the mall was greatly abbreviated, Eddie knew, but he promised Steve he wouldn't rat him out. Betty just made a bigger promise to himself that he was going to get Steve to a hospital the very second this was over. Well, that was between him and the looming Hat Sam pretzel sign. Eddie was very abruptly reminded that Victoria didn't know any of this either when an articulate shriek of rage echoed across the food court. Victoria Harrington was not a small woman, but she was still at least a head shorter than Chief Hopper. Yet when she stepped toe-to-toe with him, her face a thundercloud of rage, all of that height difference seemed to disappear.
"You left my son alone to fight monsters, and you thought it was a good idea to keep a secret?"
"We all signed non-disclosure agreements," Hopper started, before Victoria cut him off with a tone so vicious that Eddie was viscerally reminded of the worst of the days of King Steve.
"He turned 18 in March. He was a minor without a guardian present when he signed those. They have the legal enforceability of toilet paper, and the fact you didn't know that makes me deeply concerned about the competence of the police force in Hawkins."
"Mom." Steve shoved himself off of the counter and walked across the food court, Eddie and Robin half asleep behind. His spine was a line of tension, and Eddie couldn't tell how much of that was from pain.
"I could have told you when I didn't. Don't blame Hop. He was doing what he could to protect Elle."
With her focus turned again to her son, Victoria stepped away from Chief Hopper, who Steve apparently referred to as Hop. Today was really fucking weird.
"But who was protecting you?"
she asked, and she sounded like she had the day she told him about Delia. She sounded small. Steve opened his mouth, but Eddie leaned in close.
"If you say you didn't need protecting, I will find a section of unbruised skin, and I will bite. Don't even try it with me, Harrington."
Steve closed his mouth. June 1985. "Coke, huh?" Eddie was losing the fight to keep his voice impassive. Here was the thing. The true nature of his relationship to Steve was secret, something between the last two Harringtons and the last two Munsons. Rumors were actually swirling that Wayne was courting Victoria, or had maybe been having an affair with her before Richard left, and Steve and Eddie were trying to learn to cope with their impending future as stepbrothers. No one said anything to dissuade the rest of Hawkins from that idea, never mind how patently stupid it was. Which meant that when Billy's normal supplier ended up in prison, he had no problem coming to Eddie to get what he needed. Eddie hated few people the way he hated Billy Hargrove. Steve had begged him not to do something stupid, had gestured to the scar that spiderwebbed up into his hairline.
"He'll kill you, Eddie. I'm not kidding."
Steve's absurdly large hand was on Eddie's neck, like he was going to try to scruff Eddie like a naughty kitten and shake him into obedience. Except he didn't. He just kept his palm there and asked, like Eddie's well-being mattered to him, that Eddie not do anything to fuck with Billy Hargrove. Eddie nodded, struck dumb under the weight of Steve's gaze and the heat of his palm, and promised that he would not go and fuck with Billy. And yet, it took months, but here was Billy, coming to Eddie, hat in metaphorical hands, to pay Eddie to indulge his addiction. There were 100 different things that Eddie could think of doing that would be the kind of tiny, petty revenges that weren't enough for how much he hated Billy, but might have appeased his promise to Steve. There were 12 things he could think of that would do significantly more damage than a petty revenge, but that wouldn't be keeping his promise to Steve. But look, Eddie wasn't a saint. Not even remotely.
"Sorry, man,"
Eddie said, digging through his lunchbox like he was looking for a bag of cocaine. Never mind the dime bags tucked away in the corner he could see perfectly well.
"I'm completely out."
"Like, fuck, you're out." Billy took a step forward like he was going to go looking through Eddie's lunchbox to find his own drugs. Eddie snapped the lid closed and pulled it away, hugging it to his chest.
"Hey, Captain Mullet, no one touches the lunchbox but me."
The beat of Eddie's heart was rabbit fast against his ribs, but he would be damned if he let Billy Hargrove walk out of here thinking he had won.
"If you don't stop lying to me right fucking now, I'm going to hurt you so badly that it'll make what I did to Harrington look like fucking child's play."
Billy wasn't shouting, didn't want anyone up on campus to hear them and come investigating, but he was puffing his shoulders up to make himself the biggest presence in the clearing. None of that mattered to Eddie, because the second that Billy brought up what he had done to Steve, Eddie saw red. There was a distant part of him that offered up a small apology for breaking his promise to Steve, but that part was mostly swallowed up by the anger he was feeling.
"Well, what do you know?"
If Eddie had been anything other than a vessel for rage right then, he would have been impressed by how casual he sounded.
"I've got a gram left for you, Mullet Boy. Must be your lucky day."
"Damn straight you do." Billy took a step forward and Eddie leaned backwards, the tiny bag of white powder held just out of Billy's reach.
"Not so fast. That'll be $120.
But he was heinously overcharging him, especially considering that the baggie in his hands was at least 80% baking soda. He called them fuck you bags, and he usually put them together when he was in a bad mood. He'd never sold one before. Billy's eyes went flat like a predator's, like he was planning on murdering Eddie right here at the broken picnic table, leaving his corpse for Steve to find. In another world, one where Eddie wasn't running on rage and spite right now, that might have frightened him.
"You're fooling yourself if you think I'll pay that. And you're fooling yourself if you think there's another dealer in Hawkins who will sell to you.
What's it going to be, Hargrove?" Billy snarled and threw a handful of bills on the table. Eddie made a production of counting them out, because that was the kind of asshole that he was. He then tucked the 620s into his lunchbox and slid the bag towards Billy.
"Pleasure doing business."
Billy shoved the bag into the back pocket of his jeans and stalked away, back to gym class or English, or whatever the fuck people who actually went to class did. Eddie waited for a full 5 minutes, counting every second, before he packed up his lunchbox and headed for the parking lot. Billy's Camaro was impossible to miss among all of the other, less actually a metaphor for my penis, cars. It was the work of seconds to drive the pocket knife that Wayne had given him deep into 3 of the tires. He debated slashing the 4th as well, before deciding that only ruining the 3 was funnier. Eddie bailed on the rest of the school day, already mentally spending the half of the money that he wasn't going to give to Wayne on some absolutely horrible pop tapes for Steve. He could call it a graduation present and hope they didn't scream, "I'm desperately in love with you. Please love me back." It had absolutely nothing to do with how Steve had spent the last month talking, at length and quite frequently, about how he had always wanted to kiss someone on the Ferris wheel while the fireworks went off. Eddie had alternated between wanting to coo at him, precious romantic boy, and wanting to hide under his bed to stop himself from volunteering for the job. "But you've got a song you want playing picked out, too," Eddie had teased, fighting his way past the monster of jealousy that was making a hole in his chest as he thought about Steve kissing some girl, about Steve thinking about kissing some girl at the top of the Ferris wheel.
"Maybe,"
Steve had said, dragging the word out like he knew admitting that would make Eddie tease him. And here Eddie was, thinking about giving Steve a better tape collection so he had something that wasn't absolutely terrible playing when he swept that lucky girl off her feet. The things he did for love. His soulmate. July 1985. There was a glorious 15 minutes where Eddie was sure that they were out of the woods. Sure, he had to deal with hearing Steve refer to himself as Daddy, and also he got relegated to the back seat? With the children? Like Robin hadn't hated Steve last week? Shouldn't soulmate privileges include perpetual shotgun? Whatever. Take the chief's probably stolen Cadillac to a hill in the middle of nowhere to set the tiny tots up at a radio tower. To facilitate communication while the adults stormed the Russian base that was under Star Court Mall? Look, Eddie knew that he wasn't the best student in the world, but he was pretty sure even the straight-A-grabbing nerds would have problems keeping up with this whole thing without missing a step. Never mind that Erica Sinclair seemed to be handling everything just fine. Never mind Robin Buckley, who had absolutely loathed Steve the entire summer, taking every second in stride with grim determination writ all over her face. Never mind Steve, bruised and beaten, standing toe-to-toe with the chief of police like he was going to fight him about the plan. Because Steve hated the plan, hated being the one who got to drive away from the mall and be done with this nightmare of a day while other people had to stay and see it through. Other people had to go down what Robin had described as a hellevator and make sure that the Russian gate was closed. Whatever that meant. Steve had almost fought the adults on this plan and had almost refused to leave without his mother. "This isn't your fight," he had said, shoulders square and jaw stubborn the way he got sometimes. Except this time, Victoria had the exact same jut to her jaw, the same line between her eyebrows. She had switched her overlarge sweater and jeans for one of the black jumpsuits the Russians had been wearing, and had re-braided her hair into the immaculate French braid she was so well known for. Her grip on her gun was less sure than Hopper's, but Eddie had watched her brain a man with a wrench earlier that night. He was fairly certain she could handle herself. "It's your fight, so it's mine." Like it was that simple. "We'll be back before you know it, and I can't bear another moment of thinking that you might be in danger." That had been that. Steve had taken the keys that Hopper had handed him, and they'd left. And the drive was fine. No. That was a lie. The drive sucked. At one point, with the dust and screeching directions from the back seat, Steve yanked the wheel so hard to the right that Eddie went sliding across the back seat, and it was only the sound of Robin and Steve's angry shouting that drowned out his yelp of pain. Eddie didn't understand how Steve was so cool about this, jumping into the back seat of the car like it didn't hurt to breathe. Catching and throwing things like one of his fingers wasn't an open wound, breathing like his lungs hadn't been filled with water. And this poor Cadillac made it most, but not all the way up the hill. And look, Eddie was not going to go hiking on a regular day, and now he's expected to run up the rest of this hill after the day he'd been through?
"God, this sucks, doesn't it?"
Robin wheezed from her spot next to him. Steve was several yards ahead of them, trailed by two children like a mother duck with her ducklings, and Eddie wanted to lie down and scream about it. "At least you're not tied up underground anymore," Eddie offered her between gasps for air. If he stopped to think about it all, he would remember that moment in the mall parking lot, when he couldn't breathe and he had been sure that Steve was dead. God, he was really never going to pass phys ed, was he? "He was really worried about you," Robin said, which was a weird non-sequitur that Eddie wasn't going to follow. "He kept saying, 'I hope he's all right,' and I thought he meant Dustin. But he didn't, did he?" What the fuck was Eddie supposed to do with that? March, 1985. It was a minor car accident. They made it most of the way home from Indy, and then some idiot didn't brake fast enough and rear-ended them at a stop sign. Then it turned out that said idiot had been drinking, and now they had to go down to the station to give a statement. And despite their trip having been to celebrate Steve's birthday, he wasn't actually 18 yet, which meant that someone, Eddie was putting money on Callahan because he was a weasel, called Victoria. It took about 20 minutes to get to the station from the Harrington house. Victoria made it in 15. Despite his own habit of dramatic entrances, Eddie wasn't sure he had ever actually seen a door burst open before. The station doors slammed open hard enough that Eddie was pretty sure they dented the plaster of the wall. At his side, Steve winced, which sent the two of them cringing in identical grimaces of pain, because Whiplash was a bitch. Victoria was wearing that same gray sweatshirt that she had been wearing that first day at the grocery store. It hadn't struck Eddie as strange at the time, but looking at it again now, he wondered why Victoria, who had gone to Northwestern, owned a University of Chicago sweatshirt. "Mrs. Harrington?" Callahan moved to intercept her, but she was looking right past him like he didn't even exist. Her eyes were frantic, wide, and darting until they settled on Steve. Eddie wouldn't call what she did a shoulder check exactly, but she very much bumped Callahan out of her way as she power-walked towards the two of them. "Are you all right, Steve? Are you hurt?" She gripped his face in her hands and turned his head this way and that, like she could see a concussion if she just looked at the right spot on Steve's face. Steve buried another wince. Eddie didn't. God, he was ready to go home and smoke and probably jerk off about that morning. It was one thing to try and fall asleep next to Steve. Who was wearing his shirt? It was another thing entirely to wake up next to him. Even sleep-rumpled and grumpy, Steve had been beautiful. Eddie didn't need this stupid car accident and the constant twinging neck pain to remind him of just how tightly he and Steve were bound together. He could never forget it. "I'm fine, Mom," Steve said. "It was just a fender bender. We're just here to give our statement. It wasn't even our fault." Victoria didn't say anything, just moved her heads down to pat at Steve's shoulders and arms, then his face again. "The bumper isn't even that bad. I can have it fixed in no time." Victoria stiffened, and there was something in her eyes that made Eddie wish they weren't in the bullpen at Hawkins Police Department right then, that they were somewhere with some semblance of privacy. "I don't care about the car, Steve." Her voice was thick. "I got a call that you've been in a car accident and that you were here, and I was so worried about you, I'm sorry for making you worry." Eddie couldn't remember ever hearing Steve sound so small before. Victoria inhaled deeply through her nose, and Eddie just knew that they were both thinking the same thing. Damn Richard Harrington straight to hell. "I'm not worried about the car, and I'm not upset with you," Victoria said slowly, each word measured and careful, despite the nervous energy that still thrummed under her skin. "I'm worried about you and about Eddie, and I want to make sure that the both of you are okay." At the time, Eddie was a little surprised that she had included him in her sphere of concern. The plan had originally been that Steve would drive Eddie back to the Harrington house, and Eddie would take his van from its weekend parking spot where they had left it before the trip to Indy and drive home. Except when they pulled up in front of the house, Victoria's little blue coupe parked next to Steve's Beamer, Eddie wasn't sure that leaving was a great idea. Victoria still looked shaken, pale and drawn in a way that Eddie had never seen her before, and Steve's eyebrows were drawing closer together with every passing minute. "Mind if I stick around for a while?" Eddie asked, like he hadn't spent every minute of the weekend with Steve so far. But the smile Steve shot him, not quite the sunshine smile, but something small and hesitant, made him confident that this was the right decision. Inside, Victoria was busying herself in the kitchen, opening cabinets and moving things around as loudly as humanly possible. "Mom?" Steve called, the door slipping shut behind him. "Are you all right?" Normally, Eddie would have been throwing his hands into the sky at that. Look at this guy. He was just in a car accident and he's worried about his mother. Except, Eddie knew that Steve was fine. The twinge in their neck had faded to almost nothing, and there was something frantic in Victoria's movements that made Eddie worried about her as well. Victoria emerged from the kitchen, dangerously full glass of wine clutched in her hand. "Sit, please." Victoria gestured at the dining room table, and though it was phrased as politeness, there was a touch of something else in her tone, something that made Eddie nervous even as he pulled out a chair and sat next to Steve. Victoria slouched, and that was another sign that something was horribly wrong, really. Down into her usual seat, the head of the table. "Her name was Delia," Victoria finally managed to say, though each word sounded like it was pulled out of her throat. "We'd known each other since we were children, and we knew we were soulmates since I broke our wrists falling out of a tree." Eddie could feel a pit opening up inside of him, some yawning portal of grief and fear that he had been ignoring since that first day when Steve smiled at him. Because Steve still had that furrow between his eyebrows, the one that meant he was hearing something he didn't quite understand. Because Victoria's hands were still shaking, badly enough that she had to set her wine glass down. Because Victoria was speaking of her soulmate in the past tense. Destiny promised them a partner. It didn't promise them love. And it didn't promise them forever. She died in a car accident on June 2nd, 1966. "Mom, I'm..." Steve stopped, words failing, before he reached across the table and squeezed her hand. "I felt the accident." Victoria's gaze was distant. She was looking past Steve like she had been looking past Callahan at the station. "And it was awful. Worst pain I'd ever felt in my life. And I would trade almost anything in the world to feel that again." She wasn't sobbing, but tears were rolling down her cheeks. She didn't lift a hand to brush them away. Maybe she didn't even know that she was crying. Under the table, Steve grabbed at Eddie's hand and squeezed, not enough to hurt, but enough to remind the both of them that they were okay. That hadn't been an accident. They were fine. "And it hurt so badly, and then it didn't anymore. It didn't hurt at all, and that was when I knew she was gone, all I have left of hers." And Victoria tugged on the sleeves of her University of Chicago sweatshirt. Eddie squeezed Steve's hand under the table, heedless of Steve's earlier gentleness. The thought of feeling that, of knowing the exact minute that Steve died, having nothing left of him but memories and a single sweater. Eddie didn't want to imagine it. "And I got the call from the station that you two had been in an accident, and I just..." She shrugged helplessly. "I was so worried." "We're fine, Mom, really," Steve said, squeezing her hand probably much more gently than Eddie was squeezing his. "We're okay. I know you are." And if Victoria's smile was haunted by a shadow that Eddie could put a name to now, well, there wasn't anything he could do about it except hold on to Steve that much harder. July 1985. Steve was tearing down the hill like it didn't hurt him to breathe, Robin so hot on his heels that Eddie felt what might have been a stab of jealousy in his chest. Or maybe, hear him out, it was his broken rib. And now they were back at Starcourt, across the parking lot, watching Nancy Wheeler put herself between a car full of children and a car revving its engine ominously. Eddie recognized that car. Eddie had slashed the tires on that car. Steve caught his eye in the rearview mirror. The grin that Eddie sent back was a feral thing. "Gun it, Stevie." The impact and the immediate aftermath were a blur in Eddie's mind, everything consumed with a bright stab of pain when the Cadillac slammed into the side of the Camaro, sending both cars spinning and saving Nancy's life. "Are you okay?" Steve asked from the front seat, eyes darting between Robin and Eddie. "Ask me tomorrow?" Robin muttered. "Not any worse than I was before," Eddie tried, before they immediately had to scramble from one car into the other, as what could only be described as a giant meat spider descended upon them.
What? And I cannot stress this enough? The fuck was that?
Crammed into the trunk space of a station wagon, pressed thigh to thigh while Steve and Eddie couldn't even enjoy it because the car was being chased by a monster. Life was so unfair. The next hour or so of his life was something that Eddie was going to bury deep, deep inside himself and not think about ever again. The fireworks, that fucking meat spider, Billy Hargrove? Why was he even here? Did he hear that someone was terrorizing children at the mall and got pissed that he was missing out? Carrying an unconscious preteen towards that monster like an offering to a god, and then... Look, Eddie hated Billy Hargrove. That didn't mean he wanted to watch the guy die. And then afterwards, the fire and the running for an exit, everyone touching each other, arms and shoulders and heads, checking to make sure they were okay. Head count, Steve said, ruffling Robin's hair in a move that made her puff up like an angry cat. And they were all accounted for. Dustin and Erica were still at the radio tower, and Steve and Eddie and their gaggle of teens and preteens were out of the mall. There was, admittedly, a long few minutes while the mall burned that Eddie could feel Steve draw up into a line of tension next to him as they waited for the adults to emerge. And then there they were, Joyce and Victoria supporting a limping, grumbling Chief Hopper between the two of them, while Murray the asshole followed behind, clearly midway through a rant that no one was listening to. The tension fell out of Steve in a rush at the realization that everyone he cared about had made it out of the mall. They were all alive. We're going to be okay. In the distance, a stray firework bloomed across the night sky, and Eddie abruptly remembered Steve talking about how badly he'd want to kiss someone at the top of the Ferris wheel under the fireworks. Eddie's broken rib hurt. There was a pounding in his head that felt like someone had taken a hammer to his skull. He was missing one of his fingernails. Distantly, he had remembered how broken Victoria had sounded when she had told them about Delia, but how badly it hurt when the pain stopped. It was the 4th of July, and Eddie finally knew that Steve was safe after what had to be the longest day he'd ever lived through. "Are you all right, Eddie?" Steve turned to him, bruises dark and eyes wide, and, well, look. And he was only a man, all right? There wasn't a lot of skin on either of them that was unbruised, which meant that Eddie couldn't grab at Steve like the animal part of his brain wanted to. But what he could do, what he did do, was close the distance between them and press his lips to Steve's own, swallowing Steve's confused noise with a kiss. He had imagined 100,000 different versions of this moment, and he never could have imagined this, the way that Steve fairly melted into him, the pleased little hum he let out, the hand that Steve got into his hair to tilt his head and change the angle of the kiss, pressing into Eddie like he wanted to live in Eddie's throat, the way that Eddie wanted to live in his rib cage, and... There was a hiss and a pop and a sudden flash of lights behind Eddie's eyelids, and Steve pulled away from him, which was the absolute last thing that Eddie wanted. Robin was standing there, looking torn somewhere between giddy and a little bashful, the remains of a single bottle rocket in her hand. "Oops," she offered, sounding completely unrepentant. "At least you got your fireworks, huh, Stevie?" Eddie grinned, ignoring how it pulled at his split lip, because there was an absolute delightful blush spreading across Steve's cheeks. Or over Steve's shoulder, Eddie noticed Robin retreating to a distant ambulance, proclaiming loudly that she hurt so bad someone needed to give her one of the shiny metal blankets immediately. "Could have done without the meat spider," Steve said, grinning right back. "Personally, I'd take 100 of those meat spiders over the hours before that." Steve looked confused, tilting his head to the side like he was a puppy that didn't understand what sit meant. Eddie put his hands on Steve's cheeks, careful of the bruises, and tilted his head back straight so they were looking into each other's eyes. If that kiss had been a leap of faith, this moment was a yawning chasm he needed to cross. "I have been fucking terrified for hours, Steve. I was so worried about you and everything hurt so bad." Steve opened his mouth, probably to apologize, and Eddie shook his head, cutting him off. "Please, let me finish. Steve, I..." It was like his mouth was stopped up by too many words trying to get out at once.
I thought you died. The first time with the water, when we couldn't breathe, I thought you died. And all I could think about at that moment was that you were gone, and I never got to tell you that I love you.
Those were maybe not the words that Eddie would have picked if he had thought about it for a second.
Steve blinked at him once, twice, like he was waiting for Eddie to say something else. Like Eddie's stupid love confession wasn't enough of a punctuation mark.
Are you finished? Steve asked after another few seconds. Eddie nodded dumbly.
I love you too, Eddie.
Steve was smiling his sunshine smile, except it was turned up to a million, the warmth of an Indiana summer in his grin.
I mean, I thought I was being obvious about it. I wore your shirt to sleep for months. I asked Mom to book us a room with a single bed when we went to Indy that one time. I kept staring at your hands, like, all of the time.
Any other time, Eddie would probably have thrown himself onto the nearest surface to bemoan the fact that they had wasted so much time. But Steve's cheeks were warm under Eddie's hands. In the distance, Eddie could hear the hiss pop of the last hurrah of the Hawkins fireworks show. And they were both alive. So, rather than whine about the time they had lost, Eddie just leaned in and kissed Steve again. Destiny promised them a partner. It didn't promise them a love. But it gave Eddie a smiling Steve Harrington under the 4th of July fireworks, and he would count that as a win. The end.